From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. This week, our update of news and events from Latin America and the Caribbean takes a look in particular at the situation in Ecuador and the situation in Haiti. We begin with a conversation about the street protests in Ecuador that have grown to the point where the government actually had to flee the capital and is now operating from a second city inside a right-wing stronghold. For more on this, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. Well, you know, the first thing that occurs to me looking at this is the huge difference between something that's happening like this in Ecuador, that's a clearly indigenous effort and clearly heartfelt effort, and the kind of phony astroturf uprisings that the U.S. manages to arrange, like they're trying to do with Guaido now, that they've done, you know, all over Latin America and around the world for decades. It just looks a lot different when the actual people are coming down the street with a noose for your neck, doesn't it?
Yeah, and this goes back to our conversation last week about the way the neoliberal political and economic model is completely unsustainable. And
right.
And when you're up against the reality why has the situation arisen in Ecuador? Because they struck a deal with the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, to implement austerity, rewarding the rich and punishing the poor, and right. that's why there's an uprising.
And that's not what they voted for. They had an election. They voted exactly against all of that, and then yeah. Lenny decided to do a little betrayal and try to deliver it anyway. Only they just didn't sit for it.
Yeah, and that is the fundamental and political reason that he was elected on a progressive platform, although. During the campaign he tried to modify that and put some distance because right. in the first round he didn't do as well as expected, so in the second round he tried to put some distance between himself and the policies of the previous government of Rafael Correa, which was had been extremely successful, but then found itself face to face with a global economic slowdown
right.
and a drop in raw materials prices.
Right.
And so what Lenin Moreno's response to that was to shift to the right. And then we have to be fair and say that he was doing that even during the election campaign. But he was elected on a broadly progressive political right. platform, and once in office he deliberately set about dismantling that, attacking his former colleagues, even right. putting his own vice president working actively with the judicial authorities via a form of what has come to be called lawfare, using the right. judicial system to for political ends and in a totally overt way, as in the case of former president Lula da Silva in Brazil. And Lenin Moreno did that even against his own vice president, who was right. his running mate on the electoral ticket.
Right.
So a complete turncoat. And it even in domestic political terms, but then also a quisling in terms of handing over his country to foreign interests.
Right. You know, especially
putting in hot to foreign interests. You know, and although it's a very complicated case, and he was obviously on the side of Chevron, he wanted to appease Chevron as that long-running case against the oil multinational Chevron came to a head. It was clear once Lenin Moreno was in government whose side he was on, and was not on the side of the Ecuadorian people.
Right.
So. So politically, that's the fundamental reason. As you said, he got into office on a broadly progressive ticket, and then went not just to he's gone from the from moving to the center, center right, to striking alliances with the extreme right, and doing a deal with the IMF.
And the
result of that has been this this explosion of popular protest, which, as you pointed out in your opening remarks, is in complete contrast to the phony kind of US-backed coup attempts that try to mask themselves as popular protest, as they've tried in Venezuela, for example, and in they've tried at different times to do it in Bolivia, which has elections shortly, and that's something that we should try and remember to talk about before we finish the program. But and also, of course, here in Nicaragua, we had the failed coup attempt last year, which was totally contrived by local organizations backed by the United States, and including the big business, what passes in Nicaragua for the big business sector, at the behest of the United States and U.S. political interests like Marco Rubio and Ileana Rosletta. And despite that absolutely clear reality, both in Nicaragua and Venezuela and Bolivia, you still have the responses from supposedly progressive forces in North America and Western Europe that end up supporting the U.S. political agenda in the region for who knows why. It's impossible to understand that. But here in Ecuador, and it'll be interesting to see how the media coverage develops and also how the institutional response develops. Now, by institutional response, I'm referring to the Organization of American States and the United Nations, who have behaved absolutely right. Disgracefully with kind of extreme deceit and cynicism in the cases of Venezuela and Nicaragua in particular. And so here in Ecuador, they're faced with a genuine popular uprising. And what are they now going to do? Right. And in Nicaragua last year, the OAS was very quick to call sessions attempting to demonize and satanize Nicaragua, the Nicaraguan government, rather, for so-called repression of peaceful protests when the protests were far from peaceful, right. And the government actually immediately called for dialogue. And that's one of the things right. that strikes me very much about the situation in Ecuador. Right. And within 3 days of the protests starting in Nicaragua last year, Daniel Ortega was calling for a dialogue, and he withdrew the measure. He withdrew the social security reform that was ostensibly right. the cause of the protest. Of course, that was a complete hoax because it was a measure that was opposed by the IMF, right? And, but anyway, I mean, that's another story. And in Ecuador, Lenin Moreno has refused to withdraw the measures that he imposed practically by decree. You know, as far as I understand it, he tried to impose the economic measures agreed with the IMF by presidential decree rather than right. putting a block of legislation through the assembly, country's legislature, right. the National Assembly there. Right. And so it was very much an imposition. There was no attempt at dialogue or consultation or anything like that. Forget it. He just did a deal with the IMF and then tried to ram it down the throats and impose it on the lives of the population of Ecuador.
Well, so there was a reorientation of Ecuador's foreign policy, for example, in a major way. I mean, you've got you know these two trends, obviously, in direction for countries in the region to choose, and you know one is either you know to continue on the path towards independence and protecting its sovereignty and you know. These things that an independent country, your own country, and the other is as you know, essentially a colony of the United States, and you know the ALBA grouping, the other groups that had been put together in the Chavez and post-Chavez area by the countries in the region, were intended exactly to shore up the independence and the sovereignty of the countries there and to allow people to construct the future together themselves without being directed by the United States. Out of Alba, out of Telesur, and even out of UNASUR, which was the all-encompassing organization, you know, Korea had offered Quito as headquarters for UNASUR, and Lenny was like, no, we're not even going to go in that, and we want the building back.
Oh, yeah, and they're so petty and mean that they even removed the statue of Nestor Kirchner,
right,
who was one of the guiding visionary strategists, the former president of Argentina, who tragically died relatively young, and they were mean to that extent. That is a perfect expression of what you're seeing in Ecuador. In many ways, is a perfect expression of the Latin American right wing and what you can expect from. And if by some horrible misfortune, the Venezuelan government under President Nicolas Maduro does in fact succumb to the incredible international pressures that it's receiving from the United States and its European allies. And what the repression that you're seeing in Ecuador is what will immediately happen in Venezuela, because there'll be such strong popular protests against the right-wing measures that any putative right-wing government in Venezuela will immediately implement.
Right.
And so, and going back to what you said, I mean, what you're absolutely right to remark that the measures imposed by President Lenin Moreno following the agreement with the IMF are very much part of an overall policy of withdrawing from regional integration initiatives that would strengthen Latin America, South America and the Caribbean, Central America and the Caribbean ability to organize as a bloc and resist corporate, it's in some ways it's not even US demands, the US government demands, because all those what you're talking about, when the US government intervenes, what is it doing? It's acting on behalf of enormous multinational corporate interests, especially these days financial interests. And so in what Lenin Moreno is doing is very much part of the local South American elite's strong subservient alliance with Western capital, in particular United States big business and financial capital. So that measure of withdrawing from UNASUR, withdrawing from OPEC, that's also part of the same thing. It's what Lenin Moreno is a quisling who's handing his country over to foreign interests, and that's what that's about. Because in order to defend Ecuador's economic interests in terms of its petroleum exports, obviously the best interests of the Ecuadorian people are to remain in OPEC. But no, he's taken Ecuador out of OPEC, and that's another signal, yet another signal, of his kind of total submission, his kind of abject submission to Western corporate interests. So, and going back to the actual protests themselves, and they've been going on now for what, 10 days? I think it's 10 days.
I mean, they moved the government out of the capital to Guayaquil. I mean, they moved the government out of the capital.
Right, and Guayaquil, of course, is a right-wing stronghold.
Right,
and so the dynamic that's happening there is unmistakably a popular insurrection.
Right.
Now, what the political agenda is of that popular insurrection, and it's not absolutely clear at the moment. But one of the things that is clear is that they're making a whole string of social demands in relation to turning back and reverting the measures imposed by Lenin Moreno. And if you compare that with what happened in Nicaragua last year, and what the what not only did Daniel Ortega, the president of Nicaragua, withdraw the measure that was supposedly the pretext for the protests, right. He immediately called for dialogue. But then the opposition said, oh, no, we don't want dialogue. We have no more social demands. We want you to go. They had no agenda except Daniel out.
Right.
Now, when you compare that with what's happening in Nicaragua and in Ecuador,
right.
And what you have is the exact reverse of that.
Right.
You have a government that refuses to withdraw the measures, makes kind of half-hearted, very insincere claims that it wants to engage in dialogue,
right.
Whereas the main organizations involved in the protests say that as far as they know, as far as they're aware, there have been no overtures from the government asking for dialogue. So you're dealing with somebody who's so dishonest. Lenin Moreno and his team are a bunch of dishonest crooks.
Right.
And Rafael Correa, the former president, has pointed out that under Ecuador's constitution, this kind of situation of extreme social conflict, under Ecuador's constitution, the provision is that that kind of situation would imply the invocation of new elections, calling new elections.
Right.
But there's no sign of that from Lenin Moreno, and that was here in Nicaragua. That was one of the key demands of the protesters once they realized that a coup attempt by force had failed. They then started calling for bringing forward elections, for which there's no provision in Nicaragua's constitution.
Right.
Well, by contrast, there is very clear provision in Ecuador's constitution for bringing forward elections when in a situation of extreme conflict or conflict between powers or something, you know.
Right.
And the constitution lays it all out. And Rafael Correa, the former president, has said, you know, if Lenin Moreno is unable to resolve the situation peacefully, then the Ecuadorian constitution should be invoked, new elections should be held, and if they are, I, Rafael Correa, will run as a vice presidential candidate.
Right.
Because he can't run. Lenin Moreno.
Right, he's term limited until this presidential term is up.
That's right.
Yes.
So that's, you know, and But the other thing that the other thing about the situation in Ecuador is that, and again I can't help comparing it also with what's happening in Haiti at the moment, which is, and Haiti, Ecuador, these things, that the crisis in Argentina, the developing crisis in Brazil, the ongoing crisis that in Colombia, which to my complete amusement is always portrayed as some kind of normal country, when it's a country that's been in permanent crisis for what, 60 years in social terms, in terms of its impoverished majority, especially the impoverished rural majority and indigenous peoples in Colombia. They've been under attack for 50 years.
Right.
Now, that's what the civil war in Colombia was all about. Now, as a result of the breakdown of the peace process, what looked like a positive development that would bring peace and perhaps some chance of social justice to Colombia, that's been knocked on the head by Iván Duque and his master Álvaro Uribe and Uribe's owners in the United States. It's all part of one continental phenomenon. We're seeing it in Ecuador. In Haiti, the situation in Haiti, which is something that we haven't looked at in very much in recent conversations, partly because I don't know much about Haiti, and at some point it would probably be a good idea for you to get somebody like Kim Ives or Daddy Cherie or somebody like that on your program to talk about Haiti, because it's very, very important. And if you what's happening in Haiti is very similar to the events in Ecuador, but it's taken place over a longer time frame. And Haiti's been in permanent crisis ever since, well, for what, for the last 30 years ever, because the United States refuses to let the Haitian people decide their own fate.
Right.
United States and France and Canada intervened in whenever it was, 2004, I think.
Yeah, 2004.
Early in 2004 to overthrow Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the then Haitian president. And ever since then, Haiti has been a perfect example of the deep cynicism, the profound hypocrisy, and the unbounded sadism of the United States and its allies. And if people want to know, well, what kind of society and what kind of economy and what kind of political arrangements does the United States want for the region, they should look at Haiti.
Yeah, go back. Let's do this. In December of 1990, Aristide was elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Essentially, a liberation theologist, Catholic priest. That's kind of even overselling him. He's a modest leftist. He's looking to, do some social reform, some economic reform. And he is too scary for the United States. So there's a coup. The Cedras leads a coup in 1991. And he's out. He had to leave the country and hide. It took until 94, 95 to try to restore the country. There was an election. Preval got to be president in 95. And Aristide works until 2000. And then he wins with 92% of the vote. 92%. Right. Okay, then there's a revolt 4 years later. He's kicked out again, and they shunt him off to, where did they take him? A Central African Republic or somewhere?
There was a revolt, but it was a United States contrived revolt.
A military. I'm talking about. This is power. The permanent state revolt kind of thing, a coup.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then following that, and the United States, France, and Canada, kind of imposed, and the United Nations collaborated with it. They imposed this kind of NGO infested regime I think the first ruler of Haiti after the 2004 coup was this mercenary character called Gerard Latortue, a person completely wrapped up in paramilitarism and various criminal activities. Anyway, and subsequently, Haiti was then subject to this regime where it was essentially occupied by the United Nations.
Right.
And we have to remember that through that time it suffered an earthquake, it suffered devastating hurricanes, and that the regime that was imposed on it by the United Nations at the behest of the United States and its allies was completely incapable of responding to the needs of the Haitian people, and they held these they got involved in this pathetic series of complete electoral farces. And for example, I think the current president is this guy called Jovenel Moïse. He took over from an interim president called Privet. Prior to Privet, there was this kind of comical semi-gangster character called Michel Martelly.
Right.
But in the election, then Martelly got elected with something like 22. There was the electoral turnout, right, was 22%, and then this guy Jovenel Moïse, he got elected on a turnout of I think it was 28%.
Right.
And so these characters. Why has that happened? Because the political system in Haiti, as a result of the almost colonial, never mind neo-colonial, imposed authorities, have no credibility among the population. Why should they vote for something that doesn't represent them? Right? And then through 2017. 2018, a scandal came to light involving the use of hundreds of millions of dollars of PetroCaribe money. PetroCaribe, you may recall, Don, is that the preferential oil deal whereby Venezuela supplied oil to countries on preferential terms, so that the countries only paid half the cost of the oil down, and they paid the rest over something like 20 years at 2% interest, with the idea being that that would create money to fund social programs. Well, in Haiti, and that was completely abused. And as a result, through 2018 and into 2019, there have been constant protests over that corruption, which the Haitian authorities have tried desperately to manage. But a recent measure introduced by the government there would more than double the cost of fuel costs for people and in Haiti. And that's an absolute disaster for ordinary people, because it immediately doubles their cost of living, because everything depends on, even cooking depends on kerosene, for example.
Right.
So these protests have erupted. And again, one has to remember that why was that imposed? Because the IMF said so, right? And so you have the hand of the IMF in these extremely violent protests and the political crisis in which Haiti is now submerged. And so and it's just so obvious to anybody looking at the region. You know, if you have to choose between the revolutionary socialist communist system in Cuba, or free market NGO neoliberalism in Haiti, and there's no contest, and the situation in Haiti is a direct result of a system that is not designed to meet the needs of the majority of the people,
right?
And it's designed to meet the needs of the elite. So let's switch back to Ecuador. And what is the situation in Ecuador? It's exactly the same. Lenin Moreno sold out his country to foreign interests, submitted to the foreign imposed agenda of the International Monetary Fund in order to supposedly stabilize the economy. But in fact, what does that mean? It means making sure that Ecuador can respond to the demands of its foreign creditors, and respond to the demands of the political geopolitical demands of the United States and the regional right wing, against the interests of the great majority of ordinary people in Ecuador. And it's just crystal clear. It'll be fascinating to see how media in the United States and Western Europe handle it, because in theory, they are always on the, for example, look at Hong Kong, and in theory they're on side of the people protesting.
Right.
Well, let's see what happens now in Ecuador. Let's see what the OAS does.
Right. And it's going to be interesting watching the whole thing develop around Ecuador with the OAS and with they've been establishing a pattern, trying to, around Venice.
Oh, yeah. And you see, the interesting thing about this is that in many ways, from the point of view of the regional right wing, it couldn't come at a worse time.
Right.
Because they have these three very important elections in Uruguay, Argentina, and Bolivia over the next week or so.
That's right.
And Bolivia votes on the 20th, I think, and Uruguay and Argentina both vote on the 27th of this month. And so what you have is a right-wing model in total breakdown crisis, kind of literally going up in flames, right, in Ecuador and Haiti.
Right.
Then you have these electorates in Bolivia and Argentina who themselves, and in Argentina, they themselves have experienced this kind of the result of doing deals with the IMF and
that's right.
following.
We saw that with, as we said with Macri, that's what happened, and that's what. Well, look, we're out of time, so we're going to have to follow this up. But there's some hot spots to watch for sure, and we will be watching them, and we'll be reporting back on this. And I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome, Don.
Thanks. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.